The iconic Registered Maine Guide, what a guide does and what it takes to become one. Maine began formally registering Maine guides in 1897, but the tradition of guiding adventurers into the Maine wilderness goes back much further. Throughout the 1800s, native Penobscot guides took visitors into the Maine North Woods. Henry David Thoreau wrote about taking guided trips in his book, The Maine Woods. And Teddy Roosevelt went out with guide William Sewell in 1877. Today, Maine guides lead a variety of types of trips, from hunting and fishing to kayaking, rafting, and hiking. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today in the program, we'll learn more about registered Maine guides, what they offer, what it takes to become one, and how guiding is changing with the times. Have you ever gone out with a Maine guide? Are you a guide with a good story to share? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine is a pioneer in bringing people outdoors to enjoy the fields, woods, and waters. The first Maine guides were registered more than 100 years ago, but people have been guiding in Maine even before that. We will learn more about the Registered Maine Guide program and what skills and know-how these guides bring to the job. And of course, on this program, we'll learn about some of the great outdoor spots to explore in Maine. In the studio with me, Bonnie Holding. She is Director of Information and Education for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and she's a master guide specializing in fly fishing instruction. Don Kleiner is Executive Director of the Maine Professional Guides Association. He is also a Maine guide who runs Maine Outdoors. And Nolan Miller is a student in the Outdoor Recreation Business Administration program at the University of Maine Farmington, and he is a Mainly Outdoors trip leader. So we want to hear from you as always. Have you ever taken a guided trip somewhere in Maine? Are you thinking of becoming a guide yourself? Are you a guide and you just want to tell the rest of us what it's like? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you on this beautiful day. I know you would rather be outdoors than here in a studio.
No, Jennifer, full disclosure, at this point in the summer, I am so delighted to be in out of the sun for a couple of hours.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. This is a nice break. Thank you.
Okay.
So, and I'm just the opposite. I'd like to get out in the sun after being inside all the time.
So let's start with a little bit of talking about sort of the mystique, the whole idea of a Maine guide. Don Kleiner, what makes a good Maine guide?
Oh, people skills. It's about the people. Anybody can do my job when the fish are biting and the sun is shining. It's the people that need to be managed, encouraged, taught to do something new. And I think that's the biggest part of it. This, all the outdoor skills are great, and all the guides got them, but the thing that sets one aside from another is their ability to work with people.
In a way, are you a bit of an entertainer when you take someone out?
So when you step in my boat in the morning, I am the show till you get off.
Aha. Do you feel the same way, Bonnie?
I do. You know, he says people management. I say sport management. The sports are our clients, but, you know, that's kind of a main term is sport. And but it's true. You have to.
Okay. You say the sports are our clients. Do you mean the people doing the sport are the sports?
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so that, you know, you are. The minute you meet them, you know, whether it's in the morning, afternoon, or evening, when the minute you meet them until they leave, you've got to keep them happy. So you are entertaining them.
And I'm guessing you're a bit of a psychologist in a way, too, because someone's coming to you and they're coming because they want to catch a beautiful trout. But they're really coming for other reasons, too, aren't they?
Yeah. Some of them will actually say they're hiring a friend for a day. You know, they just want somebody to go with them. They don't want to do it by themselves. And I think it is the whole package. It's not very often I hear somebody say that they want to specifically catch a fish. That's secondary. They just want to have a good experience.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to turn to you, Nolan. These guys have both guided for more than 30 years. You're just going into it. What appeals to you about becoming a guide, and what are you hoping? Where are you hoping this is going to take you?
Well, what I really like to see is people having fun. People here in Maine come for vacation, come to have a good time, come to see nature, And if I can be that person that goes and helps them experience it and have a good time and entertain them all day, I think that really helps them have a good time, have a good, you know, a little bit of remember for the rest of their life and just help them move forward and have fun in life like that.
Tell me about how your studies at UMaine Farmington connect to being a guide. You can take a class for, or more than one class for credit, right?
Yes. I did just get done about a month ago taking a class to help me become a Maine guide here pretty soon. But I've also taken classes on whitewater guiding, canoeing and kayaking, camping, and all of these fun things that help you learn all the stuff you need to know. We just had, through Maine the Outdoors, we just had some fly fishing clinics and all this really cool stuff that students can be a part of to learn new things in the outdoors.
It sounds like a lot of young people's dream.
I hope it is, and it is for me, and I know a lot of the people at Farmington, but we're helping to create that and make it even bigger.
So, and actually, Nolan, he made my heart sing a little bit ago because I heard he was a business management person. The thing people don't understand is frequently I meet someone and they say, oh, you're a Maine guide, you must work for the state. No, I run a small business, and I've run a small business for 32 years. And lots of people get into guiding and they don't realize all you got is a license that lets you run a small business. There are very few employer-employee relationships in guiding. There are some, don't get me wrong, but most of us run small businesses. So the basic business skills are huge in guiding.
And I think it's definitely going to give you a step up into the recreational atmosphere that you're going to go into. Having those skills are critical.
Yeah.
The ones that, you know, the people that just guide and think they can just guide and not pay attention to the rest, they're not nearly as successful.
So, Bonnie, talk to me about the basic qualifications. You know, in 1897, Maine began to register guides. This became something that was involved a license. How does one achieve this? What do we need to do? You're representing the state. What does somebody need to do?
Can we back up and talk about the first guide first?
Yes.
Because I think it's great to have Bonnie do that.
Okay. No, I would. I would love to talk about the history. And I know
and
that
I got some
she was the first guide. Go
there
ahead.
You
tell
go.
Us.
Right. Yeah, it was a she. Her name was Fly Rod Crosby or Cornelia Crosby. And she was our first registered Maine guide. And it was a thank you to her for all the work that she had done in promoting the hunting and fishing and recreational area especially the Rangeley area, but in the state of Maine. So it's very, very cool. And she was just recognized this spring for the Maine Women's, what was that?
Women's Hall of Fame.
Maine Women's Hall of Fame. She was just inducted into that this spring, which is just a very cool thing.
And I read that in 1897, when we started the Maine Guides program in Maine, that 1,000 people became guides. I mean, it was a big deal from the beginning.
Right from the beginning. And I think actually it was a bigger number than that. You know, I've seen numbers of like 1,700 that were in it. And it was just to kind of protect their resources, actually.
I interrupt?
Of course you can.
And I will anyway.
I was going to say, nothing I can say about that.
Part of the kind.
We know each other too well.
We know each other.
Yeah.
So part of the conservation movement at that time, the guide's license was implemented about the time the hunting license was. And there were not at that time enough game wardens, not that there are enough today, but Maine guides were given the authority to ask anyone to see their hunting license, which in fact, interesting discussion, we still carry that right. The legislature's discussed it twice in my career and gone, oh, no, we want them to have that authority. Just an interesting, we were the first line of making sure everyone had their hunting license. And that's carried forward now more than 100 years.
Nolan, I'm going to turn back to you, and then I'm going to come back. And I still want to find out from you, Bonnie, what it takes, Nolan needs to go through to become a guide. What kind of guide do you want to be? I know there are a whole bunch of do you want to lead people hunting or fishing or kayaking or all of the above?
I lean right now more toward the recreation side. What I do at Manly Outdoors there in Farmington is a lot of canoes and kayaks. We do a lot of hikes, all for students. But that seems to be what I enjoy, the things with paddles and hikes and seeing great views. So that's kind of what I'm leaning toward right now. There's always room for other things in the future. But right now really is the recreation side.
And what no one's talking about is how Maine guiding has changed over the years, right? I mean, it really, as you said, used to be about hunting, and now it's about so much more.
Right. Yes. It's hunting, it's fishing, it's whitewater rafting, it's sea kayaking. It has grown.
Yeah, okay. my favorite new one is yoga on paddle boards.
I teach that, actually.
Oh, do you?
Sometimes, yeah.
That's a guided activity now in this state. Who would have guessed?
Nobody would have guessed. I can't imagine. Even 5 years ago, I don't think that came across us.
I can't even imagine. I can't imagine having good enough balance.
I know that.
That's my favorite part.
It's just your entertainment to watch all your class fall off.
Oh, no, you get to watch them fall off and get wet, and then you have even more fun. If you stay dry, you didn't really go paddleboarding.
Right.
In my...
Okay.
I was just trying to just be on the board, let alone do anything on it.
So, Bonnie, back to that question.
Sure.
And you be quiet, Don. Tell me what Nolan is going to have to do.
We're 15 minutes in and I've been yelled at.
Tell me what Nolan's going to have to do to be a registered Maine guide.
One of the first things, of course, is obviously apply. So you'd go to our website, mefishwildlife.com, go under the guide section and download and apply for your testing process. So there's a test, there's a written test, an oral test, there's a background check. We are probably... I don't think there's any state that goes to the extreme that we do in the country, and a lot of states look at us at our program and how we do the registered Maine guides because we are very strict on that and really kind of look at it because it's a safety issue too, as well as having fun out there. We are responsible for these people, so there is quite a bit that goes into it. There are a lot of Maine guide schools to be able to have it actually. I didn't happen to go to that. I don't know if you
did. No, I didn't either.
Yeah. But there are Maine guide schools, and they prepare you, to go and be tested. So it's quite involved.
All right. And how much, Don, I'm going to let you talk. How much of this involves safety, first aid, knowing what to do if something happens out in the wilderness and the your sport, the term we're using today, your sport gets hurt?
It's, again, to me, the primary quality I want is you're going to need some basic background. I want some first aid skills and some understanding, but it's the cool head to not make a situation worse and think about how am I going to react? How am I going to get out of this situation? What needs to happen? What needs to happen quickly? What can sort of wait? And it's funny because I stood up at the guides banquet. I don't remember if it was this year or last year, but there are 300 guides in the room, and I stand up and say, if I'm ever in trouble in the woods anywhere in the state, these are the people I want to come because they have those skills. They can get me out of a jam, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think that's actually the critical part of that is being somewhat prepared mentally. You got to have some stuff with you or it's a good idea to have, first aid and some other things with you. But I think you need to have in your head, okay, I'm going to take this group. You kind of take a guesstimate of their health. You kind of look at what's going on and, okay, if things go bad, what road do I have to go down? You have to be mentally prepared before you even go out on the trip.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation about Maine guides, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I know the answer is probably going to be it varies. But if I'm listening to this program, I think, well, this sounds great. I want to hire a Maine guide to go fishing or to go stand up paddle boarding or to go hiking. How much is this going to cost me?
It does vary.
It varies widely.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier today.
Yeah.
From?
A couple hundred dollars a day to $1,000 a day. Depending on who, what level of equipment, what's involved, and frankly, how long they've been in business.
If I want to hire a guide, how do I know I'm going to get someone as fantastic as one of you?
Oh, they can't. I mean, if only.
Well, that was an easy question.
Okay, almost as fantastic.
So the Maine Professional Guides Association has a website, maineguides.org, where those guides who want to join the association are listed by activity, by region. It's a good, quick way to sort out who is doing what I'm interested in the area I'm interested in pursuing it. Beyond that, it is personal. You want to talk to your guide before. And
if you can talk to some other people,
right.
It could be friends of yours who are up in the area. They might have some guides that they've been with before. That personal touch you got to connect with that, with the sport.
Because remember, you're going to spend, in my case, I do 3-hour trips, but 3 hours is a long time if I'm an overbearing moron that you don't want to spend any time with. So you need to make sure that the match is pretty good between the client and guide.
There's nothing worse for either person.
No.
You know, my days were a little bit longer, but there's nothing worse than having a sport that you just don't click with. You know, and spending 8 or 12, lots of times it would be 12 hours. That's a long day.
Oh, well, we have a call from someone I think you guys know. This is Moose Curtis. Moose, do I have your name right?
You do? You do have it right.
Okay. How did you get that nickname?
Oh, I my brother gave it to me years ago just because I'm a big guy.
Oh, nothing to do with guiding. But you're on the line because you want to talk about the Junior Maine Guides program. Tell me about it.
Correct. The Junior Maine Guides program was regulated, became a law in 1936. It was passed by the Maine legislature, and it was pushed and endorsed by the Maine summer camps. And ever since then, the Maine summer camps have been running this program where 14 to mainly 16-year-olds, and we're co-ed, boys and girls, and they get trained at their own camps. And then what my staff and I do is we run a 5-day testing camp just outside of Oquassic on the Kennebago River, and we evaluate the outdoor skills that these candidates have.
Mm. How hard is it to become a Junior Maine Guide?
You got to be pretty dedicated, and it takes most of the candidates 2 years, especially if you're a 14-year-old. You know, one, it's physical, and we have physical tests, and we have written tests, and there's just a lot of knowledge they need to know.
How many of these Junior Maine Guides go on to become Maine Guides and make a career out of it?
Probably more go on to become Maine trip leaders at summer camps, but we do get a couple a year that we know of that go on to become Maine guides. But I think a lot of them are just learning outdoor skills that they can continue on through their whole life if they want to take their family out tripping and other outdoor activities.
Well, Moose Curtis, thank you so much for calling in. Moose Curtis is the director of the Junior Maine Guides Program. Got to ask you, Nolan, did you go through that?
I did not, actually, no.
Oh, what a great program for young people. Thank you, Moose, for calling back. And with that, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Bluet, a Champagne Method wine made purely from wild Maine blueberries. Available now, BLUET.ME. Mercy Hospital, celebrating 100 years in Greater Portland, partnering with the community to deliver personal and compassionate care. MercyHospital.org. And Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com.
How many friends do you really have? Even if you count everyone you know or like on Facebook or Instagram, it's probably going to add up to one number.
You've only got 150 slots for friends and family generally. The digital world isn't really going to change that.
How our networks work? That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
And you can join us for the TED Radio Hour this evening at 11 o'clock. What is your special hidden corner of Maine? Are you willing to share? Send us a picture of your hidden corner and a few words describing what it means to you. We'll put your photo in a virtual picture frame and share it with Maine Public's audience. All entries will be entered to win a day on the coast with Maine Coast Heritage Trust, a statewide land conservation organization. Celebrate the importance of Maine's natural wonders with us. Go to mainepublic.org and click on events for all the details.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Registered Maine Guides, what they do and how they do it. Joining me in the studio, Nolan Myler with UMaine Farmington, Bonnie Holding with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and Don Kleiner with the Maine Professional Guides Association. You can join our conversation by giving us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Matt, who's calling from Wyndham. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. You were talking about junior Maine guides. I have something on the flip side. Is there any advice as far as somebody that might be a little bit older looking at a career change that may want to look into becoming a Maine guide? I'm currently in my mid-40s, and I've spent my entire career thus far in one profession and looking to possibly add some variety to my resume.
Sure, and Matt, if you're in your 40s, you're a puppy. Go ahead, Bonnie.
I was going to say a child.
Yeah, obviously, some of the Maine guide schools are probably something you want to look at, and hopefully you have an interest in the outdoors already and are pretty proficient in either hunting, mm-hmm. fishing, or one of the recreational sports before you get involved in it. And keep in mind that we talked a little bit about that. If you go down that road, you are owning a small business, and so it has all of the good stuff about owning a small business, but also all the bad stuff that goes along with it, all the paperwork and the taxes and everything else that goes along with all of that.
And so, something I would add is, as I look at the industry, the gray hair is starting to be more prevalent. I would imagine that there is an opportunity to either mentor with someone who's getting ready to go out or possibly even purchase a business and move forward that way. I think there are some real opportunities in the next 15, 20 years as we all get too old to guide.
Right, and I think that mentor part is going to be important throughout various things with fishing and hunting in the state.
Yeah, is Matt's story, people who have a career change, a common one in the guide world?
I wouldn't say it's uncommon.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. I think, though, a lot of people, they want to make that change, but they don't realize the commitment. Because even if you become a Maine guide, it takes a few years to develop a clientele. You don't do that overnight. And so there's some time commitment put in with that.
Well, Matt, good luck, and thanks for calling. Claire on Facebook says, I'm hoping that as we grow in Maine, that the term Maine guide will stand for ethical hunting practices and not the shooting of bears with their heads in barrels of food. Many of those that run hunting camps do not have my respect. More and more people are coming to Maine to view our wildlife, and we need to progress in the right direction. So let's talk about ethics. How does the Maine registered guide, just the whole system work? Are there ethical guidelines, Bonnie?
Well, I think, if you go to a Maine guide school, I believe they do go over some ethics in that.
And all of our members sign a code of ethics that they're to uphold. And if there's a violation of law, then that is immediately referred to the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. There is a committee set up that reviews those, periodically, several times a year. And in fact, you can lose your guide's license if you are doing something that's against the law.
Right. And, all of this, I guess you look at it as best practices. For all of that.
Is that something that you're talking and learning about in your classes at UMaine Farmington, Nolan?
Yes, we did talk about that in the class and how we all can hold each other accountable as Maine guides and just making sure that everyone is doing the right thing, as well as your clients, if you're out on a trip.
We're going to go to Brunswick and Judy. Hi, Judy. Go ahead.
Oops.
Yes,
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I was involved with the Junior Maine Guide program. I'm 58 years old now, but my mother was a Junior Maine Guide, and my older sister. We all went to Camp Natarsui up by Baxter State Park, and I think it builds so much confidence, and you feel like you can accomplish anything when you've completed the program. So I think it was a wonderful program, and I think we should get more kids out there doing that.
Thanks for calling, Judy. A similar email from Mark. He says there's a wonderful junior Maine guide program at Camp Oatka in East Sebago, Maine. So lots of people who like the junior Maine guide program. An email from Jenny. A shout out to the new Maine Guide and Adventures List service, Back 40. A great place to find outdoor adventures of all kinds. A wonderful online compendium of trips of all kinds for all ages. So thank you, Jenny, for that email. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, and our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Now for the good stuff. I'm going to ask you guys for stories. Don Kleiner, have you ever had a difficult client? Excuse me, a difficult sport?
Yes, a few, but I don't have stories about them.
Okay, so what do you have stories about?
So you ask about a dangerous situation.
Yes.
Okay, get ready, because this I did this story at a story slam, and it's a pretty funny story. So I have an elderly couple, and they want to go to northern Maine and catch brook trout on a pond, which I happily do, put them in the truck. We drive up in there, lug the canoe down in. The woman wanted to watercolor paint. I put her out on the rock on one shore. The fellas in the boat with me, we're fishing along, and it's September, and Don hears a little rustling up in the woods and go, huh, I think that's a moose. I'll bet I can call him. So being the main guide that I am, I give a little call. Can I
yes,
do it here?
Yes, absolutely. You must.
Well, I don't know what I said, but here he comes. Ears back, eyes pronated, full charge. Down to the shore of the pond, I'm thinking, no problem. He's not going to come into the pond for me. Remember now, I got a couple of 80-year-olds. One of them's on a rock. It's not easy to get her on or off of. And I got this old guy in the canoe. And so the moose is not deterred by the water. Here he comes swimming, and I don't know if you've ever seen one swim, but if you can think of a man in an outboard with in an inner tube with about a 9-horsepower outboard on it, he's coming. So for 10 seconds, I'm filled with panic because I don't know what to do. I don't know what I said to this moose to get him to this point. And I finally decide the only thing I can do is stand up and wave my paddle in my arms, and hopefully he'll figure out that I am, in fact, a person and not whatever it is he thinks he's coming to get.
So he's coming towards you or the lady on the rock?
Towards me.
Okay.
At full bore. I stand up, wave my arms. Hey, moose, it's the person. I'm not a moose. Go away. He does. Saved. Whew. So the moral of the story is, when you're going to call a moose, make sure you have a really good exit plan before you start.
And maybe know the language.
No,
you probably
said.
Insulted him.
I don't,
or her.
Like I said, I don't know what I said. Oh, no, it was a bull. I don't know what I said, but it was not the intended result.
And what was the reaction of your sports, your couple?
They thought it was so cool that I got the moose to come out and show himself.
They had no idea they were in danger. And you didn't tell them, did you?
Oh, no, of course not.
Okay, Bonnie, what about you? Have you ever put your sports in danger?
I've not put them in danger. I've had them put me in danger. I had, and it was, I guess, you know, look back on it now, it was pretty scary. And this was also actually happened to be a difficult sport. There were two of them. One guy was so nice and easy to get along with. The other one wasn't. He just thought he knew better than I did about anything. And I hate to say it, but I think he could walk and talk at the same time, but I'm not sure. You know, and probably I ought to be careful because maybe he's listening. But so anyway, he was getting out of the boat. I'm out of the boat. I'm on a dock, holding the boat steady for him to get out. And I asked him I asked him to step onto the dock. There was a big log beside it. I said, don't step there. Come up to where I am. Step onto the dock and everything will be fine. Well, he saw that big log and thought that was a bigger spot for him to stand on. So he did. Unfortunately, he lost his balance. And this was a quite large gentleman. Oh. Yeah. And the dock, first of all, the dock is like a two-level dock. So I'm on the lower level of the dock. When he fell, there was no place for me to go. And so he fell across my back.
Ouch.
And I went underwater. First, I hit the upper dock with my shoulder, and then I went underwater. And I'm down there thinking, well, this isn't good. I could think of better places to be than underwater. And he's not getting off of me, and I'm now starting to think, okay, I really would like to take a breath, you know, at least. And finally, he was able to roll off, and he rolled back into the boat. So again, I had to get him out of the boat. And unfortunately, I wasn't as calm as I should be. Although I didn't yell and scream or anything like that, I just looked at him and said, so what didn't you understand about not stepping on that log? And about that tone of voice. And so I got him out of the way. And the other gentleman that was with him was actually the guy that was going to be paying for the day. And he looked at me and he says, "You just want me to take him away, don't you?" And I said, "Yes, that would be a good idea." But, you know, it's just one of those things. It's, you know, I didn't see that coming. I thought for sure he'd listen to me. So you got to look at those things, too. And it was very fortunate neither one of us got hurt. He did fall right across my back. So he...
It's, and especially since your shoulder hit the upper dock.
Right.
Yeah, that
and
is.
By all rights, he should have broken my back. And I think maybe because I did have some place to go by going underwater, at least he didn't break my back. And then he didn't, you know, because the first thing I asked him before I had my little statement about what don't you understand, I did ask if he was okay. And I don't even think he had a bruise on him, but.
No, yeah, and I'm not going to ask you to compete with 30 years of guide service, but in your short career, have you had any stories yet?
Not as much like that. I think some of my favorite types of guiding are people that show up without the correct gear. Like, they'll, like, go up for, like, a 3 or 4 mile hike, which isn't that far, but they'll show up in, like, flip-flops. And I find that funny. Or just anything else. People will show up for a small hike with, you know, a backpack that's not suitable.
Like a great big backpack for a short
hike?
Or
a way too small one. A lot with the water sports. I'm a whitewater guide, too, on a lot of the weekends here in the beautiful months we have right now in the warm weather. And so a lot of people like to show up for water sports without the correct gear, wearing jeans. I had some people earlier this week for a small kayaking tour that were wearing jeans. I just find it funny. They didn't get wet. They were okay, but it's just funny. Some people really have a lot to learn that we think everybody knows. Oh, we're going in water. We wear a bathing suit. Some people don't have that experience, but they had a good time, so that's all that matters.
Great. We're going to go to Dayton and Joe. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Yes, I just have a quick question for your guest, and I'm asking this question because it's something I'm thinking of doing myself. But I've heard that there are, you know, a growing number of people taking the test and going through the process of becoming registered Maine guides solely for the sake of, you know, developing their skill base, but with no intentions of going into business. So I was just wondering, you know, if there were thoughts within the Maine guide community of the professionals that take people on excursions, of those people who only take it for the sake of a knowledge base. That's it. Thank you.
It's one of the fascinating things I think that's developed in probably the last 20 years, that the Registered Maine Guide patch has become sort of the ultimate merit badge, and that's actually pretty common.
It is very common, I think.
There are roughly 5,000 licensed guides in the state. I represent 1,200 of them, so some pretty large fraction is not actively guiding. Which is, it's just an interesting, who would have ever known, why would you go through all that to get a license to be in business, not to be in business? I personally don't understand it, but.
Right. A friend of mine just went through the whole thing, and she's very capable. I mean, she would be a great guide. She has no intentions of guiding. It was a personal challenge.
Right.
And you're just fine with that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I no reason not to. I think kind of the cool thing for me is if I should need her for a trip, I know another woman that I could take on me.
That's
although,
right.
You know, I got to say, because I think your next question is going to be, what is my client base? Well, obviously now I'm in an office, but for close to 30 years, my client base was men.
Really?
I had very few women. It's growing more and more today, but most of my sports were men.
Is it because most sports are men or... just generally speaking, or that when it comes to sort of an outdoor adventure, people aren't as specific about wanting a male or female guide?
I don't think that they are all that specific. I think when they're learning the sport, say the sport of fly fishing, or even if they're learning how to handle guns, I think they do like to learn from a woman to do whatever, you know, if it's a woman, they want to learn from a woman. But I think when it actually goes to actually hiring a guide, as long as they feel that person is capable, I think they're fine.
And I want to ask you, too, I know that you're here to represent the state and the Maine guides, but you're also really involved in another organization that is celebrating an anniversary this year.
It is. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, Casting for Recovery here in Maine, this will be our 20th anniversary of holding retreats here in Maine. And so that's a huge milestone, not just for us here in Maine, but for the national organization. So it is very cool. And Casting for Recovery is a retreat and fly fishing school for breast cancer survivors.
And someone can find out just by Googling Casting for Recovery Maine. And
they
if you're
can.
A breast cancer survivor, you may end up on a trip with you, Bonnie?
Or... They would end up with me. Yeah.
And is it about catching fish? Is it about talking about cancer, or is it about something else?
I know. I'm always saying one of my key things that everybody brings up to me, because I say it all the time, it's all about the fishing and not at all about the fishing. It's really about having the opportunity of being with, it's 14 women, so it's being with 13 other women that know exactly what you're going through. And they can, so you have somebody that you can relate to, friends and family. If you have not been through it, it's very difficult to relate. And so these women get a chance to talk with each other. And the fishing is just kind of a common denominator that we can all do and bring it together.
It's funny because that's a kernel. That is the essence of guiding. It's all about the fishing or hunting or canoeing, but it's not about that.
Right.
It's about the other things.
Okay. Well, we do have to go to another quick break, but first a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to learn about sober houses, what they are, how these homes aim to help people with addiction, whether they're regulated. Email your comments and questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. In the meantime, if you would like to join today's conversation about registered Maine guides, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Maine Association of Nonprofits, co-hosting the Nonprofit and Philanthropic Gubernatorial Forum September 26th in Bangor, nonprofitmaine.org/forum. Bar Harbor Savings and Loan, a local community bank dedicated to providing local, personalized loan and deposit services since 1902. And Savvy Event Rental, sailcloth tents, handcrafted farm tables, and walnut crossback chairs for weddings and celebrations. SavvyEventRental.com.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, the husband and wife writing team of Deborah and James Fallows embarked on a 100,000-mile journey through American small and mid-sized cities, meeting with civic leaders, factory workers, entrepreneurs, and recent immigrants to learn about their challenges and opportunities. They say they found a spirit that is reshaping our country, and they'll tell you all about it on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
And you can hear that Commonwealth Club of California program after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock. The 21st Annual Maine International Film Festival is coming up, and we have discounts available for Maine Public members. During the festival, which runs from this Friday through Sunday the 22nd, the Waterville Opera House and Railroad Square Cinema open their doors for 10 days of special film screenings. The festival also includes live performances, public art exhibitions, educational workshops, and other events. For more information about the Maine International Film Festival and Maine Public member discount, visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks and Maine Calling. Today on the program, Registered Maine Guides, what they do and how they do it. Joining me in the studio, Nolan Myler, who is a student at UMaine Farmington, Bonnie Holding with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, and Don Kleiner with the Maine Professional Guides Association. Bonnie and Don have been professional Maine guides for more than 30 years apiece. You can join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. An email from Janine, want to recommend Moose Woods Guide Services, LLC. Paul Sanicandro started this in the Millinocket area. My brother had a fabulous guided journey down the Allegash last summer. So a trip down the Allegash, classic and perfect example of when you might want to hire a Maine guide instead of going it alone.
So, and just an interesting kind of policy thing. In the last 20 years, we have conserved 20% of the state of Maine. We have now an incredible asset. And how do we convert that into economic activity? And I think guides are the answer to that question.
We'll go to Barry, who's calling from Dover. Hi, Barry. Go ahead.
I know a lot of Maine guides. A lot of them complain about outfitters that don't pay them very well. And, you know, people go somewhere and they're paying $100 for a guide at an outfitter, and the outfitter will generally about $10 of that goes to the guide who's doing all the work, really.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for your call. Is this an issue in the industry? Is pay?
I think it is, particularly in the recreational segment. Pay tends to be very low. Over time, it needs to be dealt with. But again, you're coming into this as a small business. you're entering into a contractual relationship, you need to make sure that you get what you need. It's that simple.
Right, and I think that is talking about that business management part of it, is you got to take care of yourself. You know, you can hope that somebody's looking out for you, but you really have to look out for yourself if you're self-employed.
Do you have to be insured?
Yes.
Yes, it's a good idea.
And is it expensive?
Not as bad as it used to be.
I was going to say, and the insurance industry will send me an email how delighted they are, but my policy is $700 less today than it was 30 years ago. And a dollar is a lot less than it used to be 30 years ago.
Yeah. Barry, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Elizabeth, who's calling from the Phillips Rangeley area. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. This is just a quick comment about the wonderful story about the guide who called the moose while the elderly man was in his
Oh, gosh, Elizabeth, we're losing you. Can you?
Oh, I'm trying it right now. I stopped.
Oh, shoot. See if you can call back when you have a better connection. That'd be terrific. We'll go to Nick, who's calling from Presque Isle. Hi, Nick. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to call and thank Dawn and Bonnie because we run one of the Presque Isle Fishing Game Club runs one of the three sportsman shows in the state of Maine, and that's a springtime special time of year, and the Maine professional guides and IF&W through that program are cornerstones in each and every one of those three sportsman shows. So not only are they Maine guides, but they're also out there promoting the state of Maine, and we just want to thank them for that.
Well, thanks. Nick, thanks for
thank
calling.
Thank you, Nick. Very much appreciated.
Yeah, it is appreciated, Nick. And it was good seeing you this spring, by the way.
Oh, and we'll go to David calling from Harpswell. Hi, David.
Hi there. So your guests have mentioned how part of your job is to entertain the sports. And a number of years ago, a Maine guide was relating a story about another Maine guide whose name I don't remember. But he was infamous, I guess, in how he entertained the sports. So one day he had some out-of-state sports. I don't recall if it was a fishing or hunting, but it involved having to go through a trail. And prior to starting the trip, he had gone to the store and gotten three or four Greek olives, if you know those nice mm-hmm. Greek olives, you know, kind of large and wrinkly. And he'd put them in his pocket. And sure enough, along the trail one time, came across some fresh moose droppings. So he reached in his pocket and palmed the olives and quickly went down to the pile and came up, opened his palm, looked at them, popped them in his mouth, rolled them around a bit, and then he said, oh, I think they're about 5 hours old, and immediately went down the trail, leaving the sports with their mouths, their jaws on their chests.
Oh, my goodness. Have either of you done anything like that to your sports?
Not that I would admit to.
No, I was going to say, there's no admission
well, on the radio,
here going
right?
on.
David, thank you. You know, as somebody who tends to be gullible, I'm a little uncomfortable with that story. We'll go to Robert calling from Brunswick. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I have a story. I give adventure tours in vintage Volkswagens. Vans, and I provide everything in the van, and people go for a week camping around. One of the things I provide is the old-fashioned coffee pot. Well, I had a young couple. They were, I don't know, 32, 35. They came back, and they said, well, we knew this was something for coffee, but we couldn't find the plug. It was the old-style percolator, and they had never seen an old-style percolator.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought that was funny. The other question I have, I would like to work with guides and put on adventure tours with the vans where people take a van, they go to a guide, say, for trout fishing, and maybe 2 days later go somewhere else for rafting or something like that. So that's something I'm trying to put together down the road. But it's vintagevansadventures.com.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Robert, because, Bonnie, isn't this something the state's really trying to, and those in the industry are really trying to do, is combine experiences and make it more seamless for people who are coming from out of state to maybe be able to connect with people on different levels?
It is. You know, we're trying to, you know, basically is eliminate the roadblocks. What is it that's keeping people from doing some of these things? And so if they're already camping, that's a great, great idea to try and incorporate having the guides. But we're all trying to work together, you know, whether it's through the Maine Professional Guides Association in the state or the Guides Association and the sporting industry in sportsmen clubs, you know, SAM, things like that. I think a lot of this is really coming together.
Well, and it's interesting, Jennifer, because I think part of the success of my business is that all you really need to go with me is a jacket and a smile and a credit card. But the thing that made my business more successful was eliminating those barriers.
Yeah.
You don't need a fishing pole. I have one. You don't need a fly rod. I have one. To the point of keeping rain gear in the boat for my clients.
Now, did you approach, I mean, not many people are like Robert with a vintage van, but did you approach inns, bed and breakfasts and say?
I have over the years worked with all of them. I am not a fan of the packaged trail. It has not worked out very well for me. Not to say that it might not work for somebody else. It just didn't work for my business.
And I think that's true. I think it didn't happen to work for me either. I did a better job by working with sporting camps,
okay,
and you know, and working directly with them. That was more successful.
Would
for
you
me.
Advise that Robert contact one of your organizations to try to find people to hook up?
It would
up
be
with?
Easy enough for him to sort through the membership of the Maine Professional Guides Association again by activity and region, and contact directly those small businesses.
Right.
That would be probably the most efficient way.
All right, Robert, thanks for calling. And it sounds like a really great business you have. We'd love to have you post something about it on our Facebook page. We're going to go to Elizabeth again. Elizabeth, how do you sound now?
I pulled over in a place where I think I'm okay.
You
so
sound
thank
great.
You so much
thank
for
you.
Taking my call. I just had a quick comment about the guide who called the moose, who came out and charged into the pond or the lake there. If that was September, isn't that a mating season?
Yes, and, that was. It was full on rut.
Yeah.
He had something in mind.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, he was. Well, Don was given the come hither call.
It wasn't exactly going to go well for me.
No, I think you know exactly what that moose thought he was hearing.
Yeah, I do. But I don't know what I still don't know what I said.
Well, I think it was something like, come along, honey.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Elizabeth, thanks so much for your call. We just have a couple of minutes left. So, Nolan, you're still in college looking at a career in recreation. You've got two 30-plus-year Maine guides with you. I want to know if you have any questions for them or if you're going to go back to UMaine Farmington and change your major after this program.
Well, I might have to talk to a few more before I change my degree yet. But
yeah.
I don't know if I have any specific questions, but my favorite thing right now is just hearing how everybody really entertains their sports. That's really big in my mind, is how you can entertain someone and make it personal for you and for them, and how everybody can remember what's going on that way. Remember the story, take a lot of pictures. I always push them taking pictures, or I take pictures and just give it to them at the end of the day so they can really remember it.
It's a fascinating, in my career, I remember when we used to be able to buy, and I'm showing my age, disposable 35-millimeter cameras. Do you remember those, Jennifer?
I do very well.
And I used to hand them out. And then I went to a digital camera, and now no one cares that I have a camera.
Because they have their phones.
They all have a phone.
Right.
It's in that short 30-year period of time, that complete transition has happened.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, in the guiding trip that I was talking, maybe I'm not sure if I was talking to you about that, I hadn't guided for a while. Anyway, I took a bunch of pictures, and so everybody crowded around me, and, you know, you hit that share button. And so everybody could download the pictures from my phone instead of, that used to be part of our service.
I had a party this week. They were literally live on Facebook catching fish. It was hilarious. Here we are. Here, we're doing it.
Yeah,
got
right
it.
Now.
Here he is. He has another one.
Yeah.
Go figure.
How things have changed in the years that you've been a guide. But what about, other than pictures, to Nolan's question, what are some ways to think about spending 3 hours, 4 hours, a couple days with someone?
Right.
Do you have strategies or secrets you can spill in this last couple minutes?
Yeah, Don and I guided in different ways for sure. And I think it's really important that you plan out your day a little bit. If you can keep it to about 8 hours, because surprisingly enough, after 8 hours, your patience starts to go a little bit, and you've almost had enough yourself. And if you're not having fun, they're not going to have fun. So pay attention to that part of it. Make sure that you keep it fresh and that you keep it enjoyable for yourself, as well as sharing others.
And the day that's going poorly for whatever reason, making it longer doesn't make it go better.
No.
Okay. And so we have about a minute. Matt, can you be quick? This is Matt in Old Town. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I try to hire a guide at least once a year because I learn so much. I learn something new every time I go out. And if people are interested in hiring a guide and you don't know where to turn, talk to your local game warden. They know who all the good guides are.
Is this Matt Dunlap?
This is Matt Dunlap.
Hi, Matt. Good to hear from you, Matt.
An unmasked.
Unmasked. It's your voice.
Yeah.
This is Maine Secretary of State. What do you hire a guide for, Matt?
Actually, full disclosure, Mr. Dunlap and I have hunted and fished together.
Okay. So, Matt, what do you like to hire a guide for?
Mostly fishing, because you always learn something new. All that equipment you find in the sporting goods store, they don't tell you how to use it. And there's a different use for every piece of gear. And that's what you learn from a guide.
And you learn that you need more than what you have.
That's right. And, you know, no bad reason to get more.
Right.
Matt, thanks so much for calling in and being our last caller today on Maine Calling. And thank you to our guests here in the studio, Bonnie Holding, Director of Information and Education for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. She is a Master Maine Guide. Don Kleiner is also a Master Maine Guide with Maine Outdoors. He's also Executive Director of the Maine Professional Guides Association. And Nolan Myler is studying in the Outdoor Recreation Business Administration program at the University of Maine, Farmington. He is a Mainly Outdoors trip leader. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Sober Houses in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.